The MadTech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello and welcome to this week's MadTech Podcast. I'm Grace Dillon, editor at ExchangeWire, and I'm delighted to be joined by a very special guest, Amina Follerin, Chief Executive Officer, UK Group of Oliver Agency. How are you, Amina?
I'm really well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful to have you with us. So glad you could join us. And also joining me this week is ExchangeWire Head of Content, John Still. How are you, John?
Very well, thank you. Looking forward to a weekend of my daughter demanding chocolate eggs for breakfast.
Aren't we all? Wonderful. So we'll get started as we always do with our discussion of the news of the week. Starting with, while excitement around Web3 has cooled slightly, media agencies are continuing to explore its technologies and say that clients are still interested in trying out what the next phase of the internet has to offer. A number of media agencies have recently worked with clients on digital wallet and blockchain integrations, with brands reportedly exploring how Web3 can create greater value for and loyalty from their customers. Companies have partnered with agencies on projects including custom NFTs and immersive metaverse experiences. To date, decentralized virtual platform The Sandbox has partnered with around 400 firms, such as Warner Music Group and Adidas, to deliver new engagement experiences. So, we've talked a lot about Web3 technologies, and even last week we were talking about how the reception to Web3 has tempered a little bit. But obviously there's still a lot of interest according to this report, and agencies are still working with brands to explore what Web3 can offer. So I'll come to you first, Amina, on this one. What ways have you seen brands experimenting with Web3 so far, and how have agencies kind of been working with them?
I think that although people are no longer interested in owning or trading things like cryptocurrencies and picture NFTs, smart NFTs are the ways that agencies are experimenting with brands. Smart NFTs are the new vehicle to communicate and engage with consumers. They're the future of loyalty programs and CRM if they're used correctly. The blockchain is a great way to keep track of interactions, and it allows brands to communicate one-to-one with consumers and in a unique and personalized way that didn't exist before.
Cool. Yeah. What do you think, John? What kinds of ways have you seen brands kind of exploring Web3?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that, you know, everything that's on offer in terms of the NFTs particularly have taken off. Whereas to start with, it was all about kind of the big splash that was being made in the metaverse with, you know, Nike. And I think everyone thought it was going to be big scale or nothing, basically. I think that was one thing that brands definitely need their agencies to guide them on a little bit, is the more nuts and bolts practicalities of Web3, like kind of DAOs, like NFTs, like the small scale stuff. I think, you know, it's Amina, I'm sure you've got more to say on kind of your role on, you know, guiding a client, I suppose, when they come to you with a brief and they say, you know, I want to, how should we do this? Then I think agencies, they're finding that it's rather than saying, yes, you can do a huge drop in the metaverse, they can say, rather, how about a loyalty program run by NFTs? And it's that caution that we're seeing now. And maybe it's not that the interest just has dropped off. It's just that it's a cautious time for spend anyway. And brands are looking to get more value from it than they are to make a splash.
And I think there's still a role and a demand for like immersive 3D entertainment. And I think that that's how brands can really take advantage of Web3. And I think, you know, it might be seen as frivolous and wasteful, but I think it's really important that brands can still, experiment with different technologies. And I think Web3 allows them to do that.
And how do you think that the role of the agency will kind of evolve as more experimentation, you know, plays out, and I guess brands kind of refine how they explore or kind of work with new technologies, emerging tech?
I think that agencies provide a safe space for brands to experiment, for them to try things on small scales and also large scales, and then see what works and what sticks, and then continue to do that. Whereas brands on their own are maybe a bit more cautious to do that without the help and guidance of their agency partners.
And one of the things that has maybe led to the kind of cooling of enthusiasm for some elements of Web3 are kinds of the, I guess, the risks or the maybe brand safety issues with certain technology. I mean, how do you think that will Or how do you think brands are going to navigate that? What kinds of solutions are they looking to try and deal with those issues? And again, how will the agency help with that?
I was thinking about in terms of AI, because that's a real problem that we're dealing with now.
Yeah, I do think that's like one of the major ones is going to be the generative AI stuff. Yeah. And we saw immediately from Google releasing Bard that it was caught putting out misinformation already.
And
I think that's kind of the crux of the safety issue is these tech, this is incredibly useful. I was talking to someone from an agency the other week, and they were talking about kind of how they're planning their creative department around what generative AI tools can bring to it and how it can help. And one of his major points was that it sorts out what not to do immediately. If you ask it for marketing copy, then it will give you the most basic, trite marketing copy, because it's, you know, it's taking in all this information, it's spitting the cliches back. So at the moment, he said he's using it to define what his team should not be doing, which made me laugh. I think there's that's the issue at the moment with generative AI.
Yeah, it's how and who has the ownership. If you're creating content in generative AI, is it your content or is it the owner of the AI system? So I think that there are definitely real life problems that brands and agencies are grappling with at the moment. And on your point about what teams shouldn't do, I think generative AI gives people the opportunity to experiment, but also to change their roles, to really get rid of some of the things that they should perhaps not be doing or enhance what they're doing. You know, it makes the speed to entry, it just speeds everything up. And, you know, we should be making better content as a result of it.
So brand safety is still a big issue and an evolving challenge, and the response will evolve, as you've said, over time. Thinking about how brands have already experimented with Web3 technologies, what areas do you think are the most promising, or which do you think brands or you've seen brands show the most interest in recently?
Definitely. A lot of our clients are now coming to us to ask, what can you do for us within the generative AI space? But it's something that we've been experimenting with for years. We use Seltra and other tools like that to help with the production of work for our clients. So we absolutely have generative AI baked into our in-housing solution. And I think that we'll see that continue and actually explode really as the year continues. But I think there is also, I am hearing that some brands and clients are more cautious about using it. I have heard that some clients saying, no, we're not using this internally. Again, going back to your point around safety, until the legalities around it have really been cleared up, it has been banned from some organizations.
We've discussed a lot of the issues with generative AI and some of the more troubling elements of how it's been used. So I can understand a kind of reluctance or caution around it, but still a lot of other people have been very interested in what it can do and how it can, you know, make their work more efficient. So yeah, as we've said, kind of a test and learn process.
No, I was just going to say that I think it has real benefits to just really improve the quality of content and also the speed of creation of content. But I do understand that naturally some marketers are nervous about it and what it could mean for the future of work, for how organizations might need to change. And I was having a conversation with one of our employees this morning. She's like, people are really scared about generative AI. Does that mean they all think they're going to lose their jobs? And I said, no, people aren't going to lose their jobs. Their jobs are going to change, and they're going to need to learn how to work with the AI tools rather than the AI replacing them. So I think that shift is going to be a really interesting one over the coming year.
Yeah, I think it's a completely natural response for anyone who writes for a living, particularly, you know, copywriters seeing that these things have the potential to have a sense of humor. It's like, oh wow, they can write creatively.
Yeah.
We're all out of a job. So I think that's, from anyone seeing that come in, it's a natural response. But also that's, part of the big thing is adapting to how to make use of it better rather than be scared of it. Learn how to use it quickly.
I think it has the potential to help people be more creative.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
You know, it can get rid of the areas of the creative process that just take a really long time and give you a basis from which to springboard from. So I think, you know, creativity is one of the top 10 skills that the WEF have said is going to be most in demand over the coming years. So I think that that's really important for the marketing industry as a whole, that we don't yet think that creativity will be completely replaced by generative AI.
So there's no reason to panic.
Not yet.
Not yet, no.
There's lots of other reasons to panic about it. But yeah. I don't think that's one.
No, not yet. Well, that's a nice positive note to end that story on. And I'll move us on to the second one of the week, which is that the nature of events has changed dramatically as a result of the pandemic. And some creative agencies have used this shift to implement new ways of building shared experiences. Live marketing, where brands build an ecosystem for connecting and integrations of both pre-existing, such as video chat, and emerging, such as the metaverse technologies, are providing new opportunities for brands to connect with their target audiences. With a lower risk of fraud, hosting online events also offers another way of engaging with audiences while also gaining quality first-party and contextual data. So my first question with this one is, I mean, how have you seen the nature of events change since the pandemic? Have they changed dramatically after going through the pandemic, where we were kind of confined to virtual events and now we've come out of them and people were, you know, very desperate to get back to in-person meeting? How has that change been? How have you noticed that change since the pandemic itself? And have events become more important, do you think, after the pandemic to brands' marketing strategies?
Yeah, I think I'll start there. I think that coming out of the pandemic, a lot of brands have really been seeking to provide joy to their consumers, and also that human connectivity that we just lost over 2020 and 2021. Suddenly, like, a hybrid event is no longer something that people are seeking out. Brands want to bring people together, and we've seen that recently. One of our large fast food chain clients recently had a large activation in central London, and it was all about giving joy back to their consumers. There's a big Helter Skelter that you should go and check out. And I think events like that are really important for consumers and their brands. And I think that, you know, events are expensive. They can cost hundreds of thousands of pounds to run. And it's sometimes quite difficult to track the results and the success of it. It's a lot of it's from anecdotal evidence, and it's quite difficult to provide the ROI on an event. But one of the things that marketers are looking for now is new and improved ways to measure value, which is why a lot of events are becoming much more tech-based. And I think the best thing that brands are doing in the event space is using the one piece of tech that everyone has, the mobile phone. Data captured by smartphones and pushed to the cloud will eventually power a modern data-driven approach to marketing, as will AI. And I know we touched on AI previously. AI would just help brands understand their audience better, and therefore increasing online engagement, helping with things like matchmaking, networking, you know, bringing people back together. And I think, you know, the art of the conversation, all of that is possible through enhanced data analytics.
Certainly. Yeah. John, what have you noticed in kind of the nature of events? How have they kind of changed as an event goer? How have you noticed them change since the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, I can speak anecdotally to our two events, well, three events that we ran last year from Madrid, Singapore and London. Tickets for the 2023 events are still available. But yeah, it was great to be at. And there is something that you can't really replicate with an online event that we found in the pandemic, that there's a joy of being in person. We found it particularly in Singapore last year at our event, because they'd literally just opened up the country by the time we... Yeah. And so we went there at the in September last year, and people were buzzing. It was great. Like, they were excited to be there. They were running across the room to greet colleagues and friends they'd not been able to see for so long. And I think that's the joy to it. And I've been to conferences this year, Brand Safety Summit I was at last week. I've been to Pocket Gamer as well in January, and there's like, they're full. It's great. It's good to see. It's a buzz. And I think the tech aspect, it's the augmentation rather than the replacement that's been good to see. It would have been sad if the pandemic had resulted in people thinking that online events were cheap and the way forward rather than bringing people together. And like you said, Amina, like the, you know, the use of the mobile, the the augmented reality stuff as well that they can do with it, it can really help bring the event to life. So I think, yeah, more of that. I think, you know, this industry thrives on that togetherness and the social aspect of it and the person-to-person interaction. So using the tech to make that experience better and to, you know, up the game in terms of events is, yeah, really, really good to see.
So, yeah, so in-person events, I mean, you said it's very difficult to measure the value or the return on interest. I was looking at a report earlier from Splash, which said that, you know, a lot of companies still think that in-person events are or generate a greater return on interest. And a lot of companies have actually looked at moving away from kind of big flagship events into smaller, more frequent ones, or what they called everyday events. Have you seen more companies kind of get into this area where they are just trying to do kind of little and often to keep in touch with their audiences? And what might be the kinds of challenges around doing that? Do you think it could cause like event fatigue or similar issues such as that? Or do you think it's a really good way of engaging with their audiences?
I think there's for and against. I think, you know, face-to-face events, little and often, it helps keep your brand front and center, but you can get event fatigue. And I think it depends on who you're trying to talk to as well. You really have to put the consumer first and what they're looking for, how they want to connect with that brand. But I think ultimately brands want to help create communities and have access to those communities, and I think the events are a really nice way of doing that.
Certainly. And I mean, Facet mentioned in this story is about how, you know, brands are looking to build ecosystems and they are using kind of new technology, and we've just talked a little bit about, you know, Web3 and the kind of integrations there. How are brands kind of tapping into Web3 technology like the metaverse to kind of build out these events and create these communities?
Well, if you look at things like the Head in the Clouds Festival in LA, where Amazon streamed live acts from the Amazon Music app, Giant Step Studio Career, the experience where they showcased the biggest K-pop acts in the metaverse, I think it's great because it gives people access that may not ordinarily have had access to those brands and those events. So I think we will see more of that.
Definitely. What about you, John? How have you seen brands kind of engaging with the metaverse to build communities, especially around events?
I think that's one of the like really interesting facets of Web3 and the metaverse is the possibilities of that. Like that connection that you mentioned, it's really interesting because there are a lot of people who cannot afford what a major ticket retailer would charge to go and see Taylor Swift, for example, or to go and catch Beyonce.
£1,000 for Beyonce.
Yeah, exactly. £1,000 at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for Beyonce. And there's, you know, that's, it's undoable. And the live music in particular is gone that way. Like it's not something you can do every day now. And so that's the possibilities of the metaverse, is that you can have a concert in there, that you get the full, you know, it's not as sensory, but you get the performance, you get the experience of it, you get the gig going experience, and it makes it more accessible. And I think that's going to be a key strength going forward, is that accessibility to things that weren't previously possible. Being at shows that you would desperately love to be at that you can't get to because it's the other side of the world or it's prohibitively expensive, and there's that chance. And I think brands are aware of that, and like that partnership and tie up with artists will be happening in Web3 as well as the live event.
Excellent. And drawing back on the reading I was doing, one of the key points was that often with events, brands are kind of reaching their existing customers, and there's less kind of, or at least they're not quite reaching potential customers or prospective customers quite as much. How do you think they can change that and use events to kind of reach out to new audiences?
I think it's about their reach, isn't it? So if they're tapping into the communities outside of their events and encouraging them to attend, whether that be, you know, I think to your point that actually having events in the metaverse, it gives people access. So I think whilst they're perhaps not accessing new audiences, if they can harness the power of those new audiences, it gives people access where they ordinarily wouldn't, and they can attract new consumers. So I think it's about tapping into the audiences before they get to the event to get them engaged in the brand, whether that's via social media or other activations.
Definitely. Well, we'll see what other events crop up. ATS London, ATS Singapore, ATS Madrid, or upcoming. You can check those out online. So we'll move on to the second part of the podcast where we talk to you, Amina, more about what you are working on and your role at Oliver. So you were promoted towards the end of last year to CEO of UK business. You were formerly the Chief People and Inclusion Officer. So what was your experience like working in, you know, as the Chief People and Inclusion Officer, and how have you found the transition as you've moved roles?
I think my experience was great. You know, we are still a growing business, so getting to be at the helm of helping an organisation grow to over 4,500 people globally was fantastic. And I think that, you know, getting to see the work that our employees do was something that was really motivational for me. And just the amount of brands that we work with and partner with, I think was, you know, it's been a fantastic experience. And I think stepping into the CEO role, it's just enabled me to cement the experience that I had previously. I know the company well. I know at some of our brands, getting out and meeting our clients, understanding what they need from us, has been where I spent most of my time for the first 4 months of the year.
Lots of events.
Lots of events. Lots of podcasts, interviews. It's been great. I've enjoyed it so far.
Fantastic. And what kinds of things have you been focusing on now that you've moved into the CEO role?
For us, it's understanding what our clients really want from us as an organisation over the coming, you know, 2 years, and making sure that we're in the right shape to help them deliver that. I think, you know, we all know that this year is quite a challenge from a marketing perspective. And I think that we're best placed to help marketeers really get the most out of their budgets this year. You know, they can do more for less if they partner with us. So just really understanding what that means in reality, and working with my executive team to help make sure that we're creating that and that we're front and center of those conversations.
Definitely. And what kinds of challenge, I know you touched on budget, and obviously we are in a cost of living crisis, so financial is obviously a big one, but what other kinds of challenges have you noticed, you know, primarily along clients, and how have you been working with them on those?
I think budget has been the primary concern for most. We hosted a round table last week, and most of the CMOs around that table said that they'd all had budget challenges this year, and actually we were in place to help them deal with those challenges. And I think they also want to be able to do more with those budgets as well. So they have less of it, but want to do more with it. And so we've been having conversations around how we can help them do that. And I think, you know, generative AI, we talked about it at the top of the segment, but that really puts us in a position when you combine generative AI with in-housing, it really gives marketers the opportunity to do better content faster and for less.
So speaking of in-housing, how do you believe, you know, or how important do you believe in-housing is to, you know, helping brands kind of, as you've said, you know, do more with less and really stay on top of their priorities and meet their KPIs?
I think it's really important. I think the statistic is something like over 80% of global brands either have or are building an in-house agency. I think it gives them back control ultimately. And for us, you know, our model has always been and will continue to be about people, process and technology, and marrying the three. So I think when you have those at your fingertips, it means that you can do so much more.
I noticed, I remember reading, you know, during the pandemic, there was a kind of flip-flopping between in-housing and outsourcing. How did you sort of notice that? Did you see a pattern of kind of brands looking to go in-house and maybe not having the capacity to do so? And how has that changed as we've come out of COVID?
I think during COVID, the requirement for in-housing went through, you know, there was already a requirement, but we were always seen as a slightly different model. But now I think that brands see us, you know, in-housing as the go-to model that they should be using. So we were in demand during COVID because I think we already had proximity to our clients, and other brands could see that they wanted and needed that proximity. And I think that that will continue, you know, has continued in a post-COVID world.
Definitely. And I mean, what's your perspective? You're previously Chief People Officer, so you've obviously been working a lot in people-centric roles, and obviously being mm-hmm. CEO of an agency, very people-centric. Mm-hmm. So what's your perspective about, you know, people and their relationships to brands, and what part do they play in the brand's success?
I think, you know, going back to, you know, an old, still old but relevant framework, the service profit chain, happy people equals happy clients. So it's so I think they're absolutely integral to a brand success. And some of the best work that I've seen are from our employees that are so immersed in their brand's world. They don't necessarily, they are our employees, but it's brand first, Oliver second. And that we like it that way because it means that they're really at the heart of what that brand wants. They're speaking to, you know, in some instances, they're speaking to their consumers. Sometimes they are their consumers. And it really enables us to kind of change the dial on what that brand looks like to the consumer.
And do you think that's a kind of attitude that's become a lot more common? I mean, since we've had the sea change with the pandemic and, you know, that's changed the nature of work. Do you think that that's the kind of more common perspective, or do you think it's something that's still emerging?
I think all businesses during COVID and post have had to really rethink about their purpose as employers. I think that's what changed during COVID. Employees just demanded a lot more. And if you look at the generations, you know, I sound like an older. If you look at the younger generations, I was saying to Simon Martin, our founder, just yesterday, that, you know, like Gen Z and the generations coming through the workplace now, the things that I'm a late millennial, tend to overcomplicate. They're just like, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you working for purposeful brands? Or why aren't you telling that brand to be more sustainable or showing them how to do it? So I think that's the stuff that changes maybe people's attitude to work and their expectations from their employers.
Do you find that encouraging? Do you think it's the right shift?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Because I think they just, you know, just going back to I have quite a few Gen Zs in my team. And as much as sometimes I roll my eyes, I'm like, oh, this is great. It's just such a breath of fresh air to have people in the organization that even though you might think something, they're just not just thinking it, they're just doing it. And they're helping us raise our game, because going back to that overcomplicating things, they're just like, what? Like, this is just a no-brainer. We should just be getting on with this. So I really like it.
Good. And I guess thinking about purpose more generally, you know, we've seen a lot about discussions about purpose-driven marketing. Is that, I guess, a deal breaker now, do you think, for a lot of agency workers? Do you think that having that purpose at the heart is kind of essential to their employment?
I don't think it's a deal breaker, but again, I think it depends on who you... I think it's the experience of work is so individualistic. What might be purposeful to me may not be something, you know, I'm really passionate about inclusion, but that might not... So that's my purpose, is to help create a really inclusive organisation where people can belong and be themselves. But I've got people in my team who really care about inclusion, but that's not what gets them out of bed in the morning. They want to create really sustainable marketing ecosystems. So I think it's about recognizing the individuals and giving them more space to find their purpose within your business.
Definitely wise words. Thank you so much, Amina, for telling us more about your work.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
It was great to have you. Really, really fantastic to get your perspective on the stories and learn more about your work. It was wonderful.
Thanks.
And thank you, John, for your discussion, and great to have you as always.
Always very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks everyone for listening. That was this week's MadTech podcast.